Welcome back. Season four. Naz, thank you so much for joining. Today, you're going to put me for my paces and ask me some questions that I've not seen, but has been collected by my team from mentees, online, on social media, but also generally. So I'm a bit scared about some of the questions that might come out, but let's go.
Okay, let's give it a go. Right, all right. Let's start with quickfire. True or false round? I'll read the statement.
Yeah.
Tell me if it's true or false and give me a short reason why.
Okay.
Okay. You can title split a building even if it still shares one electricity and water meter.
So technically you can, but it's going to cost you a lot of money because, and in effect, very short answer is I don't buy those because they're going to cost, on average, a unit to split gas, electricity, water, somewhere around £3,000 each utility. So you're looking at 10 grand. You've got six of them. You've got 60 grand just on the utilities. So yes, you can buy and do it, but please don't do it because it costs you so much more money.
Okay. A lender will never release funds until all leases are registered.
Yes, absolutely. It depends if you are splitting on entry or on exit. Usually, if you're buying and splitting on entry, the bridges that we use will allow you to buy it, give you a valuation on a split value on entry, but you need to show them that you've actually created the leases. But when you're closing at the end with other lenders, you will have to have the leases registered. And your solicitor does something called an undertaking, so a promise that they will actually register this, and that's when the funds will be released.
Okay, you can hold the freehold in your personal name, and the lease is in a limited company.
Yeah, absolutely fine. In fact, sometimes I'm advising mentees to do that because if they are not having to have a second limited company to set up where they only hold freehold, the freehold leases, which is quite an ineffective way sometimes of doing it because you're having to pay limited company cost to file accounts every year. So technically, you can actually have it under your personal name because it doesn't really hold that much value. And then all the leases itself goes into the limited company where you actually take all of the mortgages out.
Okay. Once the leases are created, land registry automatically updates everything. No follow-up needed.
So technically what happens is so once you're completed, the solicitor has, let's say, the six leases. They then does an undertaking, so a promise to the lender to say that I will register this. Then the solicitor goes and does the registration to land registry. On average, it probably take maybe a month or so for all those leases to be registered. Then once land registry has registered it, that's the job done. So now you've got six leases in that flat that's individually split on their own titles that you have then remortgaged out to six different lenders, for example.
Okay. You don't pay stamp duty when transferring leases to yourself?
It depends on the advice you've been given and how you've structured your company. So when mentees do the mentorship with me, they get access to my property tax advisory team that then helps to structure the group company structure that's needed. So if you do not have a group company structure tied in the right way, you'll end up double taxing yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, second round of questions, legal or liability? Now, I'll give you a few situations. Tell me if you're legally sound. If it's legally sound or potential liability.
Okay.
So creating five leases but forgetting to include a service charge clause.
Okay, that's definitely a no-no. And the solicitor should pick this up because the solicitor will be asking you, so how are you charging the service charge on these buildings, on these flats? Just to be clear, what is a service charge? It's when you are asking, let's say, six leaseholders or six individual flats to chip in to maintain the property itself. So that could be the roof maintenance, the insurance, the communal areas, the gardens. So it has to be on the lease. And your solicitor will make sure that you have that.
Okay. Not granting rights of access to the shared hallway.
Okay, that's a great one because so the short answer is it's a defective lease. So you have to make sure that doesn't happen because otherwise some flats in this example may not who have to go through the communal areas to get to their front door won't be allowed to. So the physicality is there, but the legality is not there. And I've seen people buy stuff in the auctions. One springs to mind in Brixton about 10 years ago, this guy bought a block of a flat when the value should have been 400. He paid 200. He was really happy that day. And I did tap him on the shoulders, maybe scared him a little bit that day and said, do you realize that there's a defective lease here where where the flats are there, but you don't have the right of access, to which he kind of turned white very quickly and realized that that 200 grand saving is going to be costing him a lot more to sort out this mess with the other leaseholders to allow him to change their leases.
Okay. Selling one lease before the others are even drafted.
Yeah, sometimes we buy blocks of flats where we get the freehold, but one lease has been split already. Typically, you see that when the owner took their flat that they were living in separately and then left the five other flats, for example, on one freehold. So there's nothing wrong with that. As long as you are still buying the freehold, what we will do, we'll collapse everything down to a freehold again and then split it again, all the six flats.
Okay, granting 999-year leases, but leaving ground rent at £500 per year.
Okay, so granting 999-year lease is my box standard go-to move now since the changes over the last kind of 5 years or so. We used to give 99-year lease, 125-year lease. Now I'm at 999-year lease. The reason why that is because there's no point in changing it after, say, 40 years on 125-year lease because you're going to have to pay all these legal fees again. One. Two, the freehold has very little value, if any value anymore. So there's no marriage value. And I've talked about marriage value before. So if you don't know about it, go and listen to what marriage value is. But ultimately, there's no marriage value. So people don't need to hold the freehold. So that's why we give 999-year lease. The question then, you're saying, well, if there is no ground rent to it. Well, since 2023, ground rent has been abolished. By the previous government. And because of no ground rent, you just put, or the solicitor don't even ask you anymore about how much ground rent to put in, they will just put peppercorn rent. Mm. And that is important because with peppercorn rent on any of new leases since 2023, it means that there is no marriage value. And because there's no marriage value, so when you come to renegotiating the lease, you're not paying tens of thousands of pounds to renew that lease, which is quite punitive and quite archaic as a model for leaseholds.
Leaving parking spaces out of the title plan.
Is that a problem? No, absolutely. We are October 2025. One of my mentees, we just sourced a building for him in the Midlands. Six flats, unconverted basement that you can add value to. But also on the side of that land, four garages with about six parking in front of it. And I said to him, look, well, let's carve this out away from the lease for you so you can actually get planning permission on the garage and car parking space, potentially to put another building there. So absolutely not. There's always multiple ways of making extra value on a block.
Okay. Third round, fix it fast.
Okay.
So you've got 30 seconds to fix each problem. Give me your immediate legal move.
Okay.
Land registry rejects your lease plan for being unclear. What's the fix?
Okay, so that is quite typical, and I've been bitten quite a lot of time when I first started in title split almost 15 years ago now. I did the usual stuff. I went to the cheap guys on Google, like the solicitor, like the conveyancer. I went cheap, and then it really bit me. Mm. So how do I fix it? Well, I've got two or three guys who does all of our floor plans from a company perspective for my own company purchase as well as my mentees, and these guys know exactly the level of spec that's required by land registry, and there is literally zero bounce back now over the last kind of decade or so. So that's how I would fix it. I'd get rid of what I've inherited from maybe the seller and get my guys in and do the floor plans properly.
Okay. A leasehold refuses to sign the variation you need. What's next?
So that is the assumption I'm making here. We're buying a block that's already been split because there's a leasehold there already. And that is a challenge in itself. So quite frankly, if I was buying this right now and I find this, I would not buy it. Because if you're going to have a problem with a leaseholder that is not going to let you vary the lease, quite frankly, it's the freeholder that has that right, not so much the leaseholder. But leaseholder can be a bit of a pain if they have a bit more say in the building. So technically, I would walk away from it if I find this going to be an issue, because quite frankly, there are thousands, tens of thousands of these buildings lying around that we're buying, that we're finding for mentees, and we're buying for ourselves. Quite frankly, I'm always saying to people, move away, just find the next one, because this is going to be too long, too much hard work for you to deal with.
Okay. The lender insists on individual titles before releasing finance. How do you bridge the gap?
The cue is in the question itself. You bridge it. So I've come from a period of time in my life, 20 odd years ago, 15 years ago, I used to be scared of bridging finance. And I didn't understand it. I didn't know enough about it. I heard all the bad things I used to hear about it, never the good things. So now I work with a select handful of bridging company that are really reliable, understand the strategy. We've taught them about the title split strategy. They understand it. So the way to bridge this issue of that you mentioned is basically we will use a bridging finance company to buy the building as it is. We will then get the leases created to split on entry. So they will allow us to actually buy the building. And I'll give you an example next of the exit value. So let me give you an example. So October 25, we're buying a building at 685,000. The valuers have already come in and said, right now, on a split value with leases in place, it's worth £850,000. And then once we do the work that we say we're going to do, it's going to be worth already about 1.1 million. So what the bridging finance company is now lending us is 75% of the 850,000. So somewhere around £560,000. So on entry, I'm only now putting £100,000 deposit instead of £180,000 that you would normally typically do. So bridging finance companies, the right ones who understand title split and people who work with us, they get access to this. They are the absolute key to some of these challenges.
Okay. Boundary overlaps slightly with a neighbor's garage. What's your next step?
God, if I've bought it already, I have to deal with it. It's not an ideal situation for me to kind of get involved. Not because it's just hard work. You know, you've got to then approach the neighbors, get the title plans, and then start to negotiate with them, see who's encroached on whom land. And that could take months. And hopefully you get somebody who's fairly reasonable. But if you don't get somebody reasonable, then you end up in court, which is not an ideal situation. But if I was looking at it and I found this on entry with my solicitor, I would have that conversation. I would knock on the neighbor's door before I buy it and see whether we will have some agreements here or not. If it's not, quite frankly, there's, again, way too many deals to go and buy than to go and spend a year in court to try and fix this issue.
Okay. The client realizes after completion that one flat has no access to bins. What do you do?
So we own the freehold, and maybe there was a defective thing where there was no access to bins. We will then make sure that when we create the leases back again on that building, we will allocate everybody the same equal rights to communals, to bins, to the gardens and everything else in there. So that's a relatively easy fix on the title. But technically, if you've got a building and you've got flats in there, they have they should have the right to have these amenities.
This is going to be the most challenging of all one-word answers, because I know they're quite
technical.
I'm a man
of many words.
Not only that, but it's quite technical. But anyway, let's go with it. Quickest round of all, one-word answers only. First thing that comes to mind, right?
Yeah.
So biggest rookie mistake?
Buying the wrong building because it's cheap.
Most valuable clause in a lease?
The premium that you're assigned to that lease.
Freehold or leasehold, which causes more stress?
I think leasehold, because you have to manage the day-to-day stuff.
Your reaction when a client says, I found a cheap conveyancer online.
Oh my God.
Most used legal phrase in property. Overused.
I think this one's going to work.
A line you might find in the lease. Tell me what's wrong with it.
Okay.
Tenant responsible for roof repairs, but roof covers two other flats.
Okay, so technically there's nothing defective about this, because if you think of a block of three flats, ground floor, first floor, top floor, and the top floor presumably is the one that's saying roof repairs, well, technically the service charge should, because it's a roof, you're sharing that, the whole thing, building is sharing that roof, the technicality should be in the lease that's almost a Section 20. It's a big work that everybody has to chip in.
Okay, no mention of insurance obligations.
That should be part of the freeholder responsibility in the freehold. That would say we will insure the building and manage the building, but then we will recoup that cost through the service charges. So it's important that when you are using the right solicitors who understand it, the lease is created right, so that the freehold responsibility are clear, as well as the leaseholder's responsibilities, service charges and cost are clear.
Okay. Lease refers to flat 2. But the plan labels it as unit B.
That is technically quite a big issue, because depending on, because what would happen here, the council maybe has designed it as a unit B, and on our lease is showing flat two. Mm. So we need to make sure that there's a reason why there's a disparity, and figure out before we assign the lease and the numbering of that lease, we check why is it B from the council and two from this one. It could just be that the old owner fancied 1, 2, 3. The council actually had it listed at A, B, and C. We have seen this before, and there is a process that is called a naming and changing process in the council. Not the hardest, but it's, you know, if you can try and figure out if you can align with what's already there with the utilities, for example, the councils, the council tax, try and stick to that. Otherwise, you're opening up a can of worms for yourself.
Okay. Ground rent every year, every 10 years, doubling each time.
Okay, that's illegal now, actually. You're not allowed to do that. And the solicitors, or your solicitors who understands it, or our solicitor team that we put you in touch with as part of the mentorship, will not allow you to do that. It's illegal because it's punitive to the leaseholder, but also you're going to struggle to get a lender to lend now. Most lenders will look at it and say, absolutely, we're not lending on this, because the numbers get crazy. So if you do 1,000 now, that's 2,000, that's then 4,000, 8,000, and it keeps doubling up to 16,000 in, you know, almost 50 years' time. So definitely not allowed.
Okay. No clause giving the freeholder access for maintenance.
Okay, so the freeholder on the freehold needs to have the rights to say we need to come in to do the maintenance and repairs. And that is a must. That would not be a defective freehold if that's not put in this in your freehold. Because otherwise, who else is managing this building? Exactly.
Okay, next round. Rapid valuation logic. Let's test how legal setup affects value. Tell me which option adds or protects more value. Question one. Flat with 999-year lease or 75-year lease, which sells for far more, and roughly how much more?
So which one would sell for more? So the 999-year lease would definitely sell for more, purely because the minute that a lease drops below 80 years or below, there is something called the marriage value, which is currently still present for existing flats. What that means was, what that means is, you buy a flat at with 75 years and it's cheaper, because the reason why there's this marriage value tied to it. And how does marriage value work? Is basically, let's say this flat now is worth 100 grand with a 75 year lease, but you will come to me as a freeholder and say, look, I want to increase my lease back to 125 years. Why do you want to do that? Because the mortgage companies will not lend you, or there'll be a lot less option when you drop below 80 years. When you come to me and I said, you know, okay, fine. If I give you another extension to 125 years, this lease now, or this flat is now worth not 100, it's worth 200,000. So there's an £100,000 uplift in it. Mm. And the marriage value, roughly speaking, will be somewhere around 50% of that value. So you will keep £50,000 worth of uplift, and the freeholder, you will have to pay him or her £50,000. On top of that, the cost of the surveyors, the lawyers, and all that kind of thing that goes with it. So you're probably in for another £60,000. So in total, you make 100 uplift, you pay 50 to the freeholder, and 10 on cost. So you end up probably costing you more money and more hassle.
Okay. Freehold and leases kept under one company or separated, which gives better refinance terms.
Okay, so technically and definitely, you lenders will not allow you to have a freehold as well as the leasehold under the same company. Why? Because I think, and I don't know this for sure, but you can imagine this would have happened before 100 years ago, where the freeholder can go in and actually change the leasehold's terms without triggering any alerts to the lenders. In effect, taking them out of the leasehold and their interest of the leasehold. So because of that, no lenders really will allow you to have the freehold and the leasehold together. So they want you to break them apart. One company owns the freehold, the other company holds the leasehold. Mm-hmm. And why is that important? Because when you try to do the example I've given to try and expunge the lenders get an alert from Land Registry to say, do you know that this is happening? And then the lenders can step in and stop that.
Six flats split legally, but sharing one entrance, better or worse to lenders?
Actually, there's nothing wrong with that, depending on obviously clearly the structure of it. But if you've got one front door and there's a hallway, and off the hallway you've got six doors, that's quite normal. I mean, any others, Ballymore, Huggins Home, they're all going to operate in that way. So there's no issue in that at all.
Okay. Registered leases versus pending applications. Impact on valuation.
So registered leases. So if you are registering the lease now on a split, you will have to put a premium figure on it. Generally speaking, you will want, the lenders will ask you to put a market value figure on it rather than an estimated or hope value on it. So you will have to put a value on it before they even start to think about giving you a mortgage on it. Is it risky for them? No, because they will send a surveyor out to check that value. So technically, there's not much difference between that example and an example of where the lease has already been created and the value has already been registered. The surveyor will still go out and check the valuation to protect the lender.
Adding proper service charge clauses, value added or neutral?
You have to have a service charge that's both reasonable and considered, because, for example, a service charge calculation will vary based on what you're buying. Typically, if I'm buying a grade two listed building with old sash windows in a conservation area with a flat roof in it, my service charge is probably going to be a lot higher than if I buy a little conversion of two flats with a pitched roof, with no kind of main hallway to share, and no garden to maintain and stuff. So my service charge will be cheaper. So it just depends of what you're buying, the structure you're buying it in, and more importantly, then the value that you assign to that service charge. You put it too high, it then becomes an issue to sell.